The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com. I always have such pleasure talking with people who have much bigger brains than I, and one of those being Thomas J. DiLorenzo, president of the Mises Institute. He's a nonprofit organization that exists to promote teaching and research in the Austrian School of Economics and individual freedom. Honest history, too, which is a big part of being a free country. Also, international peace in the tradition of Ludwig von Mises and Murray N. Rothbard. Speaking of honest history, he is author of Hamilton's Curse, How Jefferson's Arch Enemy Betrayed the American Revolution and What It Means Today. Welcome. By the way, welcome back, Tom. It's a pleasure having you on here. I would dare say that the real Lincoln is another part of that real history. You write a lot on that, don't you? Welcome back to the show.
Yeah, I do. I have 3 books out on the whole thing, and I'm an economist by trade. I was an economics professor for 41 years before I became president of the Mises Institute, and I wrote these several books because I was interested in the economics of the Civil War, which has been pretty much ignored by most historians, which is understandable. They're historians. They're not economists, and that's how I got interested in that, and Hamilton, for that matter.
I wanted to ask you then, now, of course, I'm a Republican, and I work with a lot of Republicans in this area. I've been trying to persuade Republican parties wherever I talk to them, quit doing Lincoln Day dinners. Why are they still doing Lincoln Day dinners today, in your view? Why is it that people still revere Not-So-Honest Abe? I just don't understand it. If anybody did just a modicum of research, they would find out that what happened with him is that his history was revitalized in the progressive era. They're the ones that really brought him back. But what say you?
Yeah, it's kind of a funny thing because, some sometimes ask, since I'm a critic of Lincoln, some aspects of what Lincoln did, you know, economically especially, people ask me, do you think he should be taken off Mount Rushmore? And I tell them, I think everybody should be taken off Mount Rushmore because it's not a healthy thing to worship politicians with statues and things like that. I mean, that's the Soviet Union did that sort of statues of Stalin and Lenin everywhere. And not that Jefferson and Washington are like Stalin and Lenin, but I just think it's unhealthy. And, you know, George Washington himself, when the Continental Congress wanted to put his image on the coinage, he said, no, that's how despots have solidified their power throughout history.
Isn't that interesting? So we kind of went down that road in spite of the fact of being one of the freest nations ever founded. We still took on the trappings, didn't we?
Yeah, the Lincoln penny was the first coinage, American coinage, to have a politician's mugshot on it. And then, of course, all the paper money with all the politicians. And, you know, other countries don't do that. You go to Canada, the $20 bill, you have Lake Louise, in Western Canada. And not every country worships politicians on their currency or with giant statues everywhere.
Why is it, though, that it's been so difficult to tell the truth about Lincoln out there, even within the Republican Party that continues to laud the founding?
Well, he was deified. There's even a book that was published in the 1940s called The Deification of Lincoln, and after his assassination, and it was done by the Republican Party in cahoots with the New England clergy, and they wanted to solidify the political power of the Republican Party. And there's a book called The Unpopular Mr. Lincoln by a historian named Larry Tagg, T-A-G-G. And he's during his own lifetime, Tagg documents with all the original sources, magazine articles, New York Times editorials, and so forth, that Lincoln was by far the most hated and reviled president in American history during his lifetime. And he's talking about Northerners, people in the Northern states. Of course, he's doing the
Southerners. Of course, Confederates weren't fans. We get that. Yeah. We certainly understand that.
Yeah.
But what people don't know is the Northern changed. Is what he did to to people in the North, right, Tom? I mean, that's been my issue
right.
here.
Because he suspended the writ of habeas corpus and mass arrested tens of thousands of people without due process for just criticizing him. He basically redefined treason as meaning criticizing Abe Lincoln and his administration. And, you know, something Hillary Clinton today would like to do. She proposed imprisoning people for criticizing her politics on the Internet. And then he introduced the draft, and he sent 15,000 soldiers to New York City during draft riots. and they shot into the crowds and killed hundreds of people in the streets of New York City. And you know, in the war itself, you know, the latest research says that as many as 850,000 Americans may have died during the Civil War. The number used to be 620,000. And even that number, the old number, is more than all the Americans who died in all other wars combined up to this day.
And not that I wanted to just make this about Abe, but this has been what you've been most famous for, I think, in the books. And I'll never forget when I first read The Real Lincoln a number of years ago, and I just felt like, oh my gosh, I've been lied my entire life to by the court historians, by government school teachers back when I was there. And yet everything you put in that was footnoted. It was all research. It was there, you know, for anybody to read, but Nobody teaches it. And, you know, I guess history is taught by the progressive victors, I guess the people that want authoritarians running the place. Would that be a fair assessment of where we find ourselves now?
I've always said the whole Lincoln myth is the ideological cornerstone of the American state. All the political parties have, you know, latched on to Lincoln. Even the Communist Party USA used to hold Lincoln-Lenin Days parades in New York City. And you could go online, you could look up the Communist Party convention of 1932 in Chicago, and they had gigantic pictures of Lenin on one side and Lincoln on the other side. And so once he was deified, it didn't matter what he actually did. You know, the story, you know, was created of the saintly Lincoln. And there are things that happened, like Harper's Magazine was a very famous magazine in the 19th century. They had a lithograph of an angel ascending to heaven with big angel wings, and beneath the angel was an open tomb, a tomb with an open, it was opened, and the head of the angel was Abraham Lincoln. And so they literally compared him to God. And they literally deified him, and then that led to sort of deification, more or less, of the presidency, and then the government itself. And in one of my books, I quote Robert Penn Warren, the famous novelist. He wrote All the King's Men and a lot of other very famous things. And he wrote a book called The Legacy of the Civil War in 1961, rather. And he said that what this did, this deification of Lincoln did, was to create a treasury of virtue in the government. And the government claimed that whatever it did was virtuous because it was the U.S. government that was doing it.
And nothing could be further from the truth.
Lincoln and the Civil War. Yeah. Some things it does are virtuous and many things are not.
Yeah.
And Robert Penn Warren said, you know, all the wars, you know, right after the Civil War, they waged basically a war of genocide against the Plains Indians to make way for the government-subsidized railroad corporations, and that was awful. 45,000 Indians were killed. We intervened in the Philippine insurrection, and the U.S. Army killed some 200,000 Filipinos because they had just gotten rid of the Spanish Empire, and the U.S. government said, oh, no, you don't. You're going to be part of the American Empire. And you know, and so that's all justified because of the Lincoln myth. Even in our time, Newt Gingrich, 10 or 12 years ago, wrote an op-ed in the Wall Street Journal. Title was Lincoln and Bush. And he argued that President Bush at the time should have invaded Lebanon, Syria, you know, three or four, Saudi Arabia, several Muslim countries in the Middle East. And he said, well, because that's what Lincoln would have done. Yeah. And so I tell my friends, whenever the neoconservatives start quoting Lincoln, you know they got another war up their sleeve.
Exactly. And that's just it. And I know people will tell me today, even when it comes to matters of secession, up until the Civil War, there were numerous secession movements that had been made. Many of them states that said, hey, listen, you know, we joined this voluntarily and we can leave voluntarily. And it was always just implied that you could do this because, you know, but now people will say, well, you know, the Civil War, Tom, ended up settling slavery or settling the question of secession because, you know, it's illegal. No, I said, no. What it said is that if you try to leave, they'll come and kill you. And there's a big difference between settling it legally. It's never been settled legally, has it, as far as secession goes?
I think it has been settled legally. I mean, namely, it's legal. It's illegal and constitutional. You know, the New Englanders were the first to try to secede. They actually held a secession convention in Hartford, Connecticut in 1814. And anyone listening can just go online and Google the Hartford Convention and read up on it. And no one was saying to Massachusetts, if you secede, we will bomb Boston into a smoldering ruin and plunder everybody's private property and burn down all the private homes like they did in the South and mass murder civilians by the thousands. That would have been considered to be the biggest sin in the history of the world at the time. But that's exactly what happened during the Lincoln era.
And I think it's very important to keep this in mind as we continue to be told these myths. And now that I've made sure that no one will ever have me emcee a Lincoln Day dinner again, we'll just set that aside, okay? Because I wanted to take you into your main trade, which, of course, is an economist. You've been a professor been an economics professor and so much more. And what are we looking at here now in 2025 with the incoming Trump 2, Trump version 2.0? Many promises get made. The markets, of course, are screaming higher. Part of me is a little suspicious about that, especially when I see Tesla screaming higher. Now that Tesla is buddy-buddy with Trump, I think the market's assuming that he's going to be treated more favorably. Or am I being just cynical in this world?
No, that's certainly true about Tesla. That's true about Tesla. Trump could do a lot worse, though, than having Elon Musk as one of his advisors.
Agreed.
But the market is mostly happy that we dodged a bullet and we're not going to have a communist in the White House.
That's good.
And that's what Kamala Harris was, a communist. She's a Berkeley communist. That's who she was. And I call the Democrat Party of today the Communist Party USA. It's pretty much what they're about altogether.
Well, you know, when the CPUSA no longer runs presidential candidates because they've said that the Democrats fulfill their goals, I'll take them at their word here, Tom, really.
Yeah, right. They do. And political parties in Europe that call themselves the Socialist Party of the whatever country, you look at their programs, they're all exactly the same as the Democrat Party in America. And so that's who they are. So we dodged a big bullet. And, of course, when President Trump was president the first time, he did get some tax cuts passed. And one of the best thing he did in economics was deregulation. Mm. He got rid of a lot of regulations. And that is a real curse on our economy. The average citizen has no idea how many tens of thousands of pesky regulations there are. And it was very, very interesting. Just a couple of weeks ago, you heard of these thugs in Pennsylvania. They went and killed a man's squirrel and a pet squirrel and a pet raccoon.
Peanut and Fred, the raccoon, I think was the...
Yeah, because they're just trying to justify their job. They're some sort of natural resource bureaucrats. And this guy, well, he apparently had these pets in his house for 7 years. And they said, they might be spreading rabies. And they would kill them. And that's an example of the respect that the government bureaucrats have for Americans today. And there are tens of thousands just like these people out there. And it'll from all levels of government. And Trump did a pretty good job of scaling that back. And I hope he scales it back more. He had a rule that said for every new regulation, you have to get rid of two. And I think he should change it to at least 10. If you want a new regulation, get rid of at least 10 others.
Well, I'd love that idea. I can tell you in my broadcast industry, Tom, that the Trump administration was very helpful. There was a public file rule that we had to maintain that we used to have to print out every single piece of correspondence the radio station had about programming and put it in a big file. We'd have to print it out and put it in the file and do all this sort of stuff. And then Trump's guy running the FCC says, does anybody ever look at those things? And the radio stations said, no, we don't. And so they got rid of that rule. They got rid of that rule. It's just like, oh my gosh, probably saved me a week's work each year just taking care of the paperwork here, Tom.
Yeah, that's the effect of regulation. It diverts your energy from your job and your business and serving your customers to serving these useless government bureaucrats. And the only reason they had that rule is to justify their loser jobs. They weren't protecting the public from anything. What were they protecting the public from in doing that? I have a friend who owns several print shops, and she prints checks for banks, things like that. And she tells me she's the owner, and she spends at least 50% of every day dealing with government regulations. because there's a lot of chemicals involved in printing.
That's right.
And then she has a lawyer she has to hire just to deal with the legal things regarding regulation. And she's a small businesswoman. And you multiply that over the millions of small business people we have, and people are just running around like puppets, of the government. And that has to be reversed. That has to be radically changed. And I think Trump is our one hope to make at least a dent in that.
Do you think he can do this with, the problem that you don't want to do it with just executive orders, because they can be reversed by the next clown who ends up coming in.
Right.
Yeah.
And do you think that Congress has the appetite at this time to truly whack away at some of the kudzu that is binding us down?
Well, it requires some real leadership. We have a history of doing that. Jimmy Carter, of all people, is the one who initiated the deregulation of oil and gas and airlines and trucking. And then President Reagan followed through and made it happen much quicker than what the Carter administration wanted to do with deregulation. And so, we went through the 70s. The economy was so awful that even the Democrats defunded the Federal Trade Commission temporarily to send them a message because they were so out of control with their regulation. And so we do have a history of doing it like that, and that made some very big differences, the deregulation of the Reagan years.
How successful do you believe moving to more of a tariff-based funding of government, which President Trump has been talking about quite a bit over the last couple of years here? Do you think that's something that can work as described, or is there more to it? What are the moving parts of that?
Well, I think Trump, last time he was president, he used tariffs as a bargaining threat. You move your company to Mexico and we'll put 200% tariffs on it.
Mm-hmm.
And he did impose some tariffs, but not a heck of a lot. But, for example, he'll impose tariffs on steel again, rather, or raise the tariff on steel. But then everything that is made of steel will be more expensive, cars, buildings, everything. And so, we Americans are going to be paying more for everything made of steel. And then it might be helpful to the corporations that produce steel and the steel workers temporarily, but then at the expense of everybody else. So it's not a pro-American, pro-populist thing.
So you don't think that it's worth it to Do you think we can that it might encourage some reindustrialization of an arguably deindustrialized America? What do you think?
Well, it's a bad way to go about it.
There are
a lot of other things that can be done to ease the burdens, tax burden and regulatory burden of American companies, because we compete with cheap labor around the world because our technology and our workforce is better educated workforce and better technology. That's how we compete with people who, pay their people $5 an hour compared to we paying ours $30 an hour to do the same work, and we still compete, and that's why. So there's a lot we can do besides that. But protecting an industry from competition is ruinous because businesses get lazy. That's what happened to the car industry in the 70s when the Japanese stepped in and just whooped their butts, competitively speaking, because they got fat and lazy through protectionism, post-World War II protectionism. And of course, the literal destruction of the car industries in Japan and Germany during the war. And so it's not a good way to go about bringing in this industry back to America. There are other ways it could be done in cutting the cost of government imposed on American businesses.
So you believe that should be the main focus then of Trump 2.0 moving in. That would be interesting. What about this is something that I've been a little bit concerned about. The price of gold has been saying that it doesn't think that either political party has any real appetite to cut the government spending and stop the deficit spending or trim it down. Would you agree with that? And what do you think President Trump is going to be facing in Trump 2.0?
Yeah, well, I think inflation is a lot higher than the government says. The government lies about that. There's a website called shadowstats.com, as in statistics, stats. And if you use the formula the government used in the 1980s for inflation, it's 8 to 10% today, not 2% that the Biden administration has been saying. And one of the things, and it's the Fed is what creates inflation. The Federal Reserve prints money. They put money into circulation. and too much money. We should be seeing deflation with all the great technology we've developed over the past decades, but we don't. And the reason we don't is that the Fed keeps pouring so much money into circulation, and that pumps up demand, and we have inflation. One thing President Trump could do is, you know, there was a law passed in the 30s that gave the Federal Reserve the right to the ability to buy short-term debt. That's how they expand the money supply. That could be rescinded. They could get a law passed that rescinds that, and so the Fed can no longer borrow money, can no longer buy bonds, and that'll put a big damper on inflation.
Now, do you think that that is something he'd be willing to do? Because Don is a fan of big, cheap money. You know, we know that. He's been, in fact, he's talked about firing the Fed chair right now because he thinks even now the interest rates are too high.
President Trump doesn't know much about economics. He's infatuated with tariffs for some reason, because maybe that's the only thing he knows anything about. He doesn't know much, but he has people around him who do. He's going to have economic advisors. I saw a speech by J.D. Vance just recently, and he voiced some really nice economic common sense. He pointed out that these people in East Palestine, Ohio, where they had that horrible train wreck that poisoned their rivers and everything, that the people paid a huge cost in terms of health and everything else. But these companies were given a tiny slap on the wrist. And he said, that's not capitalism. Capitalism is a profit and loss system. And you impose damage on people like that. You're supposed to pay a price for it. And he's right. And so, of course, these railroad companies were in, you know, they're hooked in with politics, and so they got a sweetheart deal. And he sort of seems to intuitively understand free market economics.
Do you think he also understands the pretty good deal that the vaccine industrial complex is also achieved with government protection?
Oh, sure. I mean, the fact that they've got Robert F. Kennedy Jr. And I read his book, and I wrote a big, long review of his book on LouRockwell.com, a website that I write for. And he actually said there's a big literature in economics on what's called the capture theory of regulation. And this literature is like 60 or 70 years old, with many examples of how industries of all sorts eventually capture the regulatory agencies that are supposed to regulate them for the benefit of the public, but instead they regulate them for the benefit of the corporations. And that's what the big pharma has achieved. And that's what Kennedy is. That's what he wants to do. He wants to get rid of that. And we'll see. We'll see.
I'll be really curious to what his
real job.
Yeah. I'll be curious if he's given a real job, or if they're just going to, make it look good. Because I have to tell you, where President Trump is going to find himself in trouble with the political class in D.C. is that both sides of the aisle take billions, well, if not maybe millions or hundreds of millions of dollars from the pharmaceutical, medical, industrial complex. Yeah. They get funded by that. Neither side of the aisle has much of an appetite for really cracking down. Would you agree?
Yeah, what he has to do is, he's the president, and he has the biggest megaphone of anybody, and he has to go and on TV and tell the public that how they're being screwed by this system, and that any politician who doesn't support him on this is voting against your health. They're voting to harm your health for the benefit of more billions in profits for these big pharmaceutical companies. And I think that'll scare the daylights out of even a lot of Republicans. And if President Trump does that, that's why Reagan was called the great communicator. He could do that. He could go over the heads of the special interests and make good speeches like that. And that's what Trump needs to do to avoid this problem of all of our politicians being sort of the political horrors of the pharmaceutical corporations, which they all are.
Yeah, the Parliament of Horrors, for sure, is what we've been dealing with for quite some time. And it's been equal opportunity. I'm not going to pick on any one particular party on this. I'm hoping that President Trump is able to see the wisdom of attacking some of these entrenched interests, rather. Because he's got, maybe a year or two before you're ending up going into the midterms. And then you got to get it all done by then, don't you? Really?
Yeah. Yeah, before the opposition can coalesce and figure out how to sabotage you, and every government bureaucrat in Washington, D.C. will be spending all their waking hours thinking of how to scheme and plot to sabotage everything President Trump wants to do. So they have to strike while the iron is hot and get all this done as fast as they can. And like you said, we don't know what's going to happen in the midterm elections as far as that goes. And so, especially since they do have their vote fraud machine intact, but I think, you know, the Republicans wised up this time and they hired 1,600 lawyers to go to all the polling places.
Yep.
And there were hundreds of incidents, they say, of the Republican election judges showing up and saying and being told, sorry, you can't come in. But their lawyers said we can be in court in 15 minutes, and that caused them to back down. So they didn't get away with nearly as much vote fraud this time as they did last time, in my opinion.
Yeah, so you can't go to sleep on it. It wasn't that they didn't try to do the cheat machine, but the cheat machine was also overcome by sheer numbers of votes this particular time. All right, Thomas J. DiLorenzo, president of the Mises Institute, Mises.org, writes for Lou Rockwell. In fact, on LouRockwell.com today is a rewrite of one of your speeches delivered at the Mises Institute supporter summits. All states are empires of lies, all of them. So equal opportunity. It's what I like about you, Thomas. Intellectually honest about it all. Okay.
Well, I'll give it a try.
All right. I really appreciate you coming on, and we appreciate what Mises is doing, and we will definitely have you back, sir. Thank you so much for the take, okay? Be well.
Okay. Have a great day.
And keep telling the truth about history. 738, this is KMED 99.3 KBXG.
Rule number one, if you're looking to sell a home, choose a local real estate agent. Hey, it's Lars. And why? It starts with an overall knowledge of the area. But even more importantly, a local agent is a friend and neighbor who cares about the community just as much as you do. In the Medford area, that'd be my good friend Jared Hokanson of Hokanson Realty. Jared's a native of the Pacific Northwest, and his wife, Colette, is a former Oregon Young Mother of the Year. The Hokansons love Southern Oregon so much, they decided to raise their family there. If you're thinking of selling, Jared Hokanson guarantees to sell your home. And if he can't get it sold at a price and deadline you both agree to, Jared will buy it himself. Some restrictions do apply. Find out what your property is worth for free and instantly. 541-772-SOLD.com. Call Jared today at 541-772-SOLD. That's 541-772-7653. Jared Hokanson of Hokanson Realty.
Lynn Barton here, Medicare Advisor at Sky Park Insurance. If you have Medicare Advantage, big changes are coming, so it's more important than ever to review your current coverage and compare plans. Annual enrollment is October 15th to December 7th. Let me help you make sense of it all. And if you're new to Medicare, I can explain how it works, your coverage options, and potential pitfalls. Call me at 541-499-0958 or find me at skyparkins.com.
At Sky Park, we make insurance easy.
Got a mess with the IRS or a tax date with the state? You may need representation. Visit FirstResponseIRS.com. First Response Resolution, your local tax resolution experts in Eagle Point, defending your rights as a taxpayer. Visit FirstResponseIRS.com.
You're hearing the Bill Myers Show on 106.3 KMED.
Okay. I got to watch it. You know, I've been having too much Democratic news and agenda thrown at me over the last few days because I got an email from a woman who was promoting an author, and I automatically, in my twisted head, changed it. It says genre blending audiobook, the perfect escape for lovers of geek lit. And of course, the first thing I saw in my mind, I was getting ready to delete it, and then I realized, oh, it's not. John, it's not gender, but I read it as gender blending. You ever have that happen where you just get so much on the gender thing and the gender affirming this and the trans that, and oh my gosh. Yeah, fortunately, Lois, you saved the pitch. I didn't delete it yet. Happens all the time, all right? It's 20 before 8. I hope you're doing well this morning. And joining me here in a couple of minutes, I wanted to catch up here with State Representative Dwayne Junker, who, of course, won re-election, and we're looking at a long session. I'm kind of curious with what positive things might be done in the state legislature moving into 2025, because we're going to have a lot to talk about then. And he'll join me in a couple, and we'll kick around some thoughts.
This is Brent with Home and Built Deck and Fence. Many customers in the Rogue Valley ask why we say fall in.
Promo code CLAVE is at LifeLock.com. Terms apply.
Hi, I'm Matt Stone with Stone Heating and Air, and I'm on KMED.
Quarter before 8. I have to play this one more time just because it makes me smile. Because you know how there are all of these progressive, hard left women that have just been going on social media and going nuts and talking about last week's election.
If you've lost faith in humanity, clap your hands. If you've lost faith in humanity, and this is your villain origin story, if you've lost faith in humanity, clap your hands.
Some guy put music to her screaming in a pillow. I love this. You know, there's nothing like having mental illness actually put out on your social media feed. But boy, there it was, loud and proud over the weekend. That is for sure. State Representative Dwayne Junker rejoins the show. Hello, Dwayne. You aren't screaming in your pillow. At least I'm glad you weren't. Welcome back to the show. Good to have you on.
I was not screaming in my pillow. We in Josephine County are winners here.
Yeah, I'll say. Well, I'll tell you, everything that GOP touched turned to electoral gold this time around. Maybe Josephine County Republican Party should be running the National Republican Party. Maybe we should do that, turn it over, even though Larry Trump apparently did a good job, you know, keeping the steel down this time around. But
yeah, that'd be great, but let's just start with Oregon first.
Oh, yeah, Oregon. Oh, yeah, Oregon. All right. What was your overall impression here, especially with where the money went? I mean, I'm already hearing that Dan Rayfield, who, of course, is going to be the attorney general elect here, you know, coming in, beat Will Lathrop. Will Lathrop, who seemed to not really want to commit to fighting Measure 114 or not defending it, you know, anymore. You know, it's just amazing what he didn't do. And he came relatively close. But now we have Rayfield talking about, as the AG, he's going to be fighting President Trump. And I thought his job was just to, you know, defend the law in the state of Oregon. Isn't that kind of silly when you think about it?
I think it's very silly, but, you know, Dan Rayfield is a very leftist person, and I would assume that at some point he would want to be governor of the state of Oregon because that's the route he's taking, aligned with, you know, Tina and Brown and all them. So it's my look at it is it's, I could see that. They spend millions and millions of dollars of outside money influencing Oregon. They don't really have the pulse of, if you got rid of Multnomah County, Oregon would be a different place. It really would be. Their votes really dictate how Oregon looks.
And then you combine that with the state university system pushing that policy throughout the, you know, as a government agency, which it was changed to a number of years ago. And there's a lot of headwinds to common sense in the state of Oregon. I'm kind of curious, though, where some of the PAC money went. And I know that people are thinking about, like, you know, real estate PACs and all these kind of things. They think of them as conservative groups. And then you see where the money goes, and it kind of gives you pause. Weren't you looking through some of those ore stars? I'd love to hear what happened with some of these places.
Yeah, I don't think the local Oregon will be Rogue Valley Associated Realtor or the Oregon Realtor Political Action Committee are a conservative group. You know, locally here, Rogue Valley Association of Realtors, which I'm a part of because I'm a realtor. I'm kind of stuck.
Yeah.
But they spent $8,000, you know, supporting Colleen Martin. She lost. They gave Pat Fahey $3,000.
They lost.
$5,000. Yeah, he lost. And then RCC, they gave $5,000. And then they spent $25,000 with Nelson Research. Now, I don't know what they did with that money. They did give money to other Jackson County people that won.
Mm-hmm.
But then the Oregon PAC, you know, they gave $15,000 a good one. So you could see that they were really pushing to change Josephine County, but they lost in everything they did here. So, but if you look at the state where they give their money, they gave it to Bias Reed, they gave it to Fahey, they gave it to a lot of Republicans too, but they play both sides of the aisle. They even gave it to people that were against each other. So they're obviously trying to buy, you know.
So you see, you think what happens with a lot of these places like, you know, the chamber, political action committees, and the real estate and the other business groups they get together. Is it kind of like not acknowledging that most of the power structure is still going to be controlled by the hard left for the foreseeable future? So you better get in line. Is there a little bit of that kind of thinking going on? At least to stay off the menu you know, not be on their menu?
Oh, I would definitely. I mean, if you want a bill or something passed in the state of Oregon, you're going to have to give it to a Democrat. They just picked up a Senate seat. They have I think it's a supermajority now. So, and then on the House side, we didn't pick up any seats at all. It's 25-35, which we're one seat from them giving them a supermajority. So if you want something done, just go to the Democrats. We don't need Republicans. And I think my Republican friends on my caucus, I bump my head. I'm a Republican. I'm not leaving the caucus. But
yeah, I affectionately nickname you Junkyard Dog. You know, we talk about that. That's what I like about you, Dwayne. I say that admirably. It's a term of admiration to call you that, because you are a genuinely conservative guy and rep in a state that seems to want to just turn everybody into a Democrat Party assistant legislator in the Republican Party. Is what it looks like. Am I right or wrong about that?
I would agree. You know, I mean, when I hear my Republican caucus people, it drives me a little nuts, and I don't engage a lot of times because they keep doing the same thing over again and expect a change. You know, it's like, I'm a common sense guy. Well, why are we giving them? Well, just look at the cover they gave for Democrats this year. You know, and this is the short session. I haven't been there other than the short session this year.
Yeah.
And then the Democrats go out and campaign on all these wins that the Republicans helped them with. 4002 was a horrible bill. You know, it didn't have anything to do with treatment. They're still spending millions of dollars on, giving out drugs, needles and stuff like that. We didn't change anything. The deflection, we'll see how that works.
Yeah, but it's still, relatively speaking, thin gruel, right? I mean, it's thin gruel rather than really strong medicine, which was truly needed with the drug recriminalization issue and drug treatment. I mean, that's what was needed, something, muscular.
Yeah, look at California voters. They passed, Measure 36 that they wanted harder crimes. And what does Republicans do? We give them cover, the Democrats cover, to pass, really soft stuff, and instead of just say, "Hey, you own this. We're not a part of this. We know what the people want. They want people locked up for committing crimes. We want to get the drug addicts off the street. We want all this change, and we want to support law enforcement. But instead, we give them cover for these really bad bills, and then we whine and cry, why are we not getting our way, or why are we not picking up seats? I don't blame some of the voters for not trusting us.
And that's just it. And, sometimes when Republicans will not actually fight, and even if fighting is just saying no. I was talking with Herman last week. He says, a lot of times I would negotiate with him. Now, this is back when he was in. It was a different legislature when he was a state senator. But said, I would work with, trying to get the worst out of a bill or get some things fixed a little bit, but I'd still vote no on it, afterwards, right? So it's like, is there a possibility you might be able to persuade some of your people there? Just start saying no more often and letting Democrats own their poor policies rather than giving them the bipartisan sheen, that kind of thing.
I am going to continue to work. We're going to, we're uncovering information every day. I have a great team. We're uncovering the scandals that the Democrats are doing. We will continue to fight for that stuff. A lot of things we find out, the Obama administration is tied in still in Oregon. All their people that left, the administration are now working in Oregon in some point of fashion.
No kidding.
It's really frustrating that Republicans don't see this. I mean, I look at people and I'm like, man, these are supposed to be very smart people that I work with. Some are lawyers. I'm not a lawyer, I'm a military guy, but I have common sense. I'm like, okay, this doesn't make sense to me. And if it doesn't make sense to me, it doesn't make sense to the public. I don't know. I don't think that our caucus really has, are listening to the people. I heard them after the election and, one or two of them like, well, look at the election. No, but the country said no. We don't want the trans stuff. We don't want none of this stuff.
No, we don't want the crazy. We don't want the crazy clown car. Right? It's essentially what we said. We're tired of the disorder. Okay. All right.
Yeah, we're not Multnomah County. We don't want to continue on this. You know, Portland votes all the more extremists back in and expects change. Let Portland die. You know, we're here to save the rest of the state. That's what we're here to do. I can't change the crazy in Portland. You know, I don't really care. Portland can die if that's what they want. But the rest of the state doesn't want this. They want us to fight. That's what they put us in. And to me, that's what I'm here to do. And if the people vote me out, then the next person will go in. I'm just going to do what I think is right.
What do you think, Ken, is an agenda that could best win for Republicans in this upcoming session? Because this is the long one coming up. Now, I know you've never gone through it, but I'll bet you've talked to people who have gone through long sessions. They've probably given you some tips. What do you think would be going on, the best tactic to take this time around? Because there's going to be a lot of pressure for Republicans to vote to go along and help Democrats again.
I think in our committee meetings, you don't pass something for just to be nice, if just because you think it is. If it's bad, you don't vote on it. I don't think you understand the structure. So you're in a committee, and you go over a bill. You have all these testimonies, blah blah blah, and then you vote to pass it on. And some people vote just a courtesy to pass it on. And I'm like, why? And then when it goes to, and then it goes to the floor. But before the floor, your caucus usually meets and talks about the bill. And then they look at the printout and they see, oh, look, all my Republican friends voted for it. Maybe I should vote for it. Hell no. You know what I'm saying? They don't see these things. And I'm like...
And to be fair, they never pass out a Republican bill, Republican-based bill out of committee. It just doesn't happen, correct? Am I right about that? Never happens.
And if it is, it's a very soft, you know, squishy bill. You know what I'm saying? Something that's...
Okay, so if Republicans propose a bill that says that we love cats and puppy videos, then the Democrats would pass it. But anything that would be tough, forget about it, huh? All right.
Yeah. It would have to be something that, you know, for one thing, it would not be anything dividing in our country. You know, obviously, abortion would be off the table.
Yeah.
Never going to happen. Abortion is in Oregon, you know, I'm a right for life person, but abortion is just a really bad thing to hang your hat on here in Oregon. It really is.
Yeah, it's a dead letter for the Republicans politically right now, unfortunately. We really are at the point where it's about changing hearts and minds, right? Isn't that really where we are?
Yes. Just leave abortion alone. I hate really saying that, but it's not winning us any more seats. We need to stay away from abortion stuff. Until we can get more power in the Senate or the House, it is just dead. It really is. They have control, and they use it against us so much. You know, look at Bynum and Dreamer race, and she just hammered Dreamer about abortion, mm-hmm. blah, blah, blah. You know, Trump's going to – and that's what they killed us on, was all this abortion stuff, which most people are – you know, not all Republicans are – right for life. They're kind of some of them are squishy.
Yeah, and what's even more interesting about that all is that abortion nationally was not that big of a deal overall in the presidential election, but it sure was in the state elections, including the state senators and state reps and things like that. That's where it filtered down, didn't it?
Oh yeah, they just hammered us on that because that's really all the Democrats have as their bread and butter is abortion here in Oregon. Because everything else they're weak on. They really are. They're weak on law. They're weak on drugs. They're weak on any rights. You know, instead, we should have been hammering them on the trans thing. That's polling well.
Yeah.
My friends, guess what? They didn't do anything to do trans. I'm the only one that I know of, well, maybe one other one, that gets beat up from the Democrats about the trans thing. But my Republican friends, they're afraid to sit out there and say anything. But I think the polling's right on it. People don't want the crazy boys in the girls' bathrooms. You know, dads.
Well, finally, you know, here's a clip from CNN. I don't know if you heard this one, but they were arguing with each other because, you know, a Democrat operative actually talked about boys and girls' sports, and they took him apart. Nope, wrong one. Hang on just a second. Here it is.
Pretty close.
That was close. That was the scream. Here we go.
There are a lot of families out there who don't believe boys should play girls sports.
They're not boys. I'm not going to listen to transphobia at this table.
So they were going after this one Democrat who's going, they're saying, hey, people don't want the boys, you know, playing in girls sports and it's true. And, you know, that was one honest Democrat, but the rest of them are just going nuts about this. How dare you say that the trans emperor has no clothes in this particular issue? But that's a big deal.
It is a big deal. My daughter plays college soccer and had to play against a 32-year-old male. What?
That's
ridiculous. She's 18 years old. Yeah. In the state of Washington, she played a Washington team back in August. And there was a 32-year-old male on the girls' soccer team, the women's soccer team. And I'm like, 32. You know, my daughter's 18. She graduated high school in June, you know?
Yeah.
Here it is. It's just not right. This is just insanity for common sense that you're trying to protect your daughters. I have two daughters and a wife, and I want to protect them against these crazy people. But my Republican friends are afraid to come out and say this is just crazy.
Yeah, well, the Republicans better staddle up on this particular issue, because the Democrats are in a circular firing squad over this one right now. And they have learned nothing. And I think it's going to be up to the Republicans to perhaps school them, you know, in this particular issue, because the people are not in line with, you know, buying a ticket to the crazy circus every time. They're just not there right now. They're not there. And I don't think they're going to be there.
There are so many things. Just look at University of Oregon. I have attacked University of Oregon. I've gone after them. Voters dropped off a bridge. There was an incident with some Jewish kids there. They're getting swastikas on the door. Let's Republicans take these issues and fight back. Those are the issues we can win on.
In other words, don't shy away from the culture wars in Oregon, right? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, there's things that we can win on that, you know, there's Republican families that have their kids at public, you know, colleges and want our support and need our support. We can win on these issues. They're just common. To me, they're common sense. I have three kids in college right now. We should be supporting them when the professors, you know, when they're, you know, bringing, I'm sorry, you're probably hurting today. No, my kids are not hurting. One of my kids has a Trump flag in her apartment, you know? There's conservative kids there. We need to support them. We need to attack these, you know, these professors that are, you know, trying to change our children.
Fair enough. Dwayne, I always appreciate the take. I have a feeling it's going to be some interesting conversation week after week when we talk during the state legislature session. And it'd be good to have your feet wet from this first session this year for you. I look forward to the talk in 2025. Got to saddle up. Got to be pretty tough, huh? That's really the bottom line here.
Yes, you do, Bill. That's what we're here. That's what I'm here to do.
All right. Thanks, Dwayne. Good talk as always.
Thank you. Okay? You too. Bye-bye.
3 minutes after 8, this is KMED, KMED HD1, Eagle Point, Medford, KPXG, Grants Pass.
Short and chilly day with the Bill Myers Show.
By the way, my email, bill@billmyersshow.com. We're going to check town hall news. Ran a little bit long there with, State Rep Dwayne Junker, Junkyard Dog, JYD Dwayne. Okay. I just love the guy. I always wish I could clone him. Yes, I know that maybe the chamber pack of Jackson County would not be pleased with a clone like that, but I sure would be. I know chamber packs. I mean, well, ugh. Yeah, we got to get the Republican Party of Jackson County back in order again, because the one thing that is for sure, we have to stop having the Republican caucus in the state legislature choosing candidates and picking and choosing. And we certainly don't need the chamber, you know, picking and choosing the particular candidates. That's my opinion, and I'm sticking to it. And I understand there are going to be some meetings in the Jackson County Republican and looking at the leadership team, see what's going on. I pray and hope that you get it together, okay? Get it together and be tough. It's going to be an interesting time. Because even though Trump won, the war is still going on here in the state of Oregon, no doubt about that, okay? Of course, the war is going on in D.C. too, because getting him in there, then he's still going to be knee-deep in alligators. You know that. Just the way it is. All right, after news, we'll have the Kim Komando Digital Update. We're also going to catch up with where past meets present, Dr. Dennis Powers, retired professor of business law, good historian guy.
This is Sophia.
Hello.